Sometimes you meet someone who has crammed so much into their life, you sort of look at it and you think, how the heck did you fit all that in? Where did it begin? That's my guest today. He's a comedian, he's been a cartoonist, he's a performer, he's a magician, he's been in films, he's been in TV, he's written and directed and starred in his own film. So much stuff. It's an absolute pleasure. Just sit back and listen to some of the stories and listen to how he got to where he did today. In fact, he's done so much that we couldn't even talk about his film, The Vampires of Bloody Island. We had to do that as a separate Patreon-only bonus. So if you're a Patreon, catch the bonus after this episode.
You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hey, welcome back. Thank you so much for coming along to another episode. My guest today is actually in the Internet Movie Database and is on Wikipedia as well. This is the caliber of guests we are talking about. This is much more like it. My guest today is he's a British actor, a magician and an entertainer, originally from Cornwall, moved to London, currently lives in South Wales, gets around a bit. As a magician, he works under three distinct identities: Alan Thorne, Professor Strange. Now, Professor Strange appeared on Britain's Got Talent a little while back, and he also appears as Gizmo, children's entertainer. He was originally a tabloid newspaper cartoonist. He's gone on to do so many different things, including directing and starring in the comedy film The Vampires of Bloody Island. He was shortlisted in the 2012 Twitter Shorty Awards, and he has appeared in Doctor Who. That is my guest today, Alan Kempthorne. Hey, Alan, how are you doing?
Hey, Keith Blakemore Noble, you lovely man. You've been doing your research, haven't you?
Well, it's always nice to know who you're talking to.
I mean, that's my entire CV that you've pretty much just gone zip, 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 zip.
Well, there you go. So if you'd forgotten who you were, now you remember. Remember, oh, I did that. Oh, okay. we've heard a very abridged bio, but who is Alan? Who is the man behind the bio?
All right. Okay. Sorry, I didn't realise there was going to be a test. So you hit me with the hard questions first, eh? Right, okay. I guess the quick and easy answer to that is I'm a creative. I'm a magician, performer, entertainer. And I guess the long answer is someone who is driven to create and not be artistically pent in any one particular thing, someone who realizes that we've only got our 80, 90 years on this planet, and that if you want to do something with it, you kind of got to get on and do it, I guess.
What? We've only got 80 or 90 years? Nobody told me. Right, that's it. End of this. I'm going to
move on.
Yeah, you've entertained at children's parties, you entertain at weddings, big events, you're on Britain's Got Talent. You represented Wales and Scotland at the magic convention in Blackpool. How does that, Wales and Scotland, what's going on? How does that work?
Okay, well, that's because we are recording this episode in 2022. We are just emerging from the COVID years. And of course, in the COVID years, everything has just been turned upside down and gone crazy. So there's this, it's this big competition for entertainers, especially magicians, held in Blackpool every year at the Blackpool Magic Convention. It's called the Family Entertainer of the Year competition. And they basically get the six best theme park entertainers and stick them on a stage and get the industry to vote on who's the number one entertainer that year. And because these are the COVID years, the heats, the regional heats that you usually have just didn't happen. You know, you just couldn't get people together. So it was all dealt with virtually and by video. And because of all of that and it not being regional, the Welsh heats kind of got sandwiched in with the Scottish heats. And I won that. So, yeah. Straight away, there I was. Hey, winning two countries. Then I just had to beat the English and the Irish. Blackpool, easy street.
Ah, no problem. No problem.
Which, of course, I didn't beat them. I mean, I didn't win it. So, but hey, I got in the top six. So, being in the top six in the country, in the whole UK, I'm kind of happy with that.
Well, that is pretty good. That is pretty impressive. And representing two countries. And let's face it, it's not the winning; it's the taking part that counts.
It actually it is, because the winning, it always strikes me as being so arbitrary in anything like that. I used to do one thing you missed out from your bio. I used to be a stand-up comedian, and in that time I entered a lot of stand-up comedy competitions, and you soon really learn within that industry, watching all the competitions, it's not really about the talent, it's about who knows who to a degree.
Yeah.
Talent's in there, of course, you know, and I'm not saying this just as a bitter person who never won any of them. Of course.
You've had a long and varied career that we touched on.
But you make me sound like I'm 80 already.
Well, I hope not, because
you've had a long and varied. I'd like to think I'm still having it.
You've crammed in a lot into your very short 20 years. Is that better?
No, I just look like I've aged wrong.
So you've had. I mean, you've done a lot, as you say. You've been an actor. You do acting, stand-up comedian. You've written and starred in your own film. You do all these magic acts. I mean, not just one. You've got three different magic personas there, and all of these stuff, which is pretty darn inspiring, I have to say.
Well, yeah, I get restless. I love to create. And as an entertainer, I can create a version of me doing different things. And I don't like being sort of hemmed in doing the same thing every day. So pretty much it seems to be a cycle of about every 7 years or so. I just completely reinvent myself and head off in another artistic direction. But being self-employed, I never actually stop doing any of the things that I've done before. So I create this whole new me, and like off I go doing that whole new me, and I've still got all these other versions of me that still
hanging
doing.
I mean, like,
yeah, I mean, the big one that I've been working on for the last few years, as you said, was Professor Strange, and I'm sure that if I just click my fingers, you'll put a fancy graphic up showing Professor Strange, won't you? Or do I have to do it old school?
Well, there you go. You've done it for me.
There we go. That's me as Professor Strange, this sort of steampunk Victorian style magician character that I'm doing at the moment. So I put all my creativity into that. But, you know, that's there's a market for that. But I've still got the market for, say, the kids' parties. I've still got a market for close-up magic. There's still a market for me as an actor. There's still a market for me as a cartoonist. You know, and so there's all these things that I'm still kind of doing to various degrees. It makes for a horrendously complicated life.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, again, during the COVID years, it meant I still had things that I could fall back on, because I've never really burnt the bridges of previous things that I've done.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, one of the things you did in the COVID years was you created a very successful Santa Hotline as well. Before we go further into exploring that, however, I just want to give a quick shout out to a sponsor of this episode. This episode is sponsored by Gary Jones from Grow Marketing and Media. Now, Gary set up Grow Marketing and Media to help business owners to engage with audiences online and to overcome any fears they have about podcasting. That's why Gary and I get on so well. What we do kind of dovetails neatly. Now, as well as helping you with editing and producing your podcasts, Gary will also take the time to talk with you about the ideas you have behind your podcast, about the process of your podcast, and about marketing your show to make it as easy as possible for you to manage your podcast. Not only that, But on the 14th of September 2022, Gary is launching Grow Radio, which is an online radio station bringing you a different podcast on the hour, every hour. So basically, if you want to find out how podcasting could work for your business, whether that's where to listen to them, how to get on them, or how to launch your own, get in touch with Gary and grab a free 20-minute chat with him. Just go to 121withgrow.as.me/free. 121withgrow.as.me/free. Have a 20-minute chat with Gary. What that man doesn't know about podcasting is not worth knowing. Big thank you to our sponsor. Now, where were we? Ah, yes.
Yeah, Santa's Hotline Co. UK. Usually as an entertainer, Christmas is like one of my biggest and busiest times of the year. And there I was in 2020, just for months, I hadn't had an audience. And I'd started doing things on Zoom and getting a Zoom magic show going up and running. I developed certain tricks that you could do just on Zoom, we've got a spoon here. And so with a little bit of magic on a spoon, have you seen someone do magic with a spoon on Zoom?
Not seen somebody do magic with a spoon on Zoom.
Well, just with a little rub there and a little rub there, a little rub in the middle, your spoon can become a fork. So, there's various things that you can do. So I started doing magic shows on Zoom, and then
that's just showing off, quite frankly.
Obviously, it's in the description, you know. So as we got closer to Christmas, I thought, right, yeah, Santa on Zoom. There's definitely going to be a market for that. Everyone wants to see Santa, but no one's going out. So I invested £400 in like real movie grade Santa. Glue on beard, and thought, not just going to be a tacky guy with a cotton wool beard, I'm a trained actor and I've worked in movies, so let's spend the budget. And did this Zoom Santa, which I marketed around the world, and found myself very busy for that Christmas with Santa's Hotline, doing live video calls to people and families and companies all the way across the world for the whole of December.
Yeah, I can imagine that must have been very popular and must have delighted countless children as well, actually getting to have a Zoom call with Santa.
Santa live from the North Pole talking to them on Zoom, yeah. It was after the year that everyone had, it was just magic. It was great for me to do. It was great for them to see. And, it meant I was actually earning a living as well, which is nice during the COVID years. In 5 years' time, no one will know what I'm doing.
I'm not entirely convinced anyone knows what you're on about at the best of times, Alan. But hey, that's another story. So let us take it back. Were you always like that at school? Were you creative and an outgoing performer? And look at me, let me do this.
Absolutely not. No, I was very, very quiet and inward as a kid at school. I mean, creative, yeah. I mean, I drew. I was kind of the school artist. I always knew I was going to be a graphic designer. Every poster and every sign in the school was done by me. The cover of the school report was done by me. The school rules on the hallway when you came in, the artwork was done by me. I mean, I was just the school artist. So it was pretty clear to me that I was going to go into a life as a graphic designer, until we began to realize that I was colorblind. So, some of my bold, creative, artistic decisions weren't quite what I thought that they were, so faced with the fact that how do you, as a colorblind person, become a graphic designer? It was just awkward. So I thought, right, black and white illustrations, cartoons, that's it, I'm going to be a cartoonist. So I started doing cartoons, and I came up with this idea that, right, I'm going to be a cartoonist for the Sun newspaper, the number one newspaper in the country. I'm going to be the cartoonist for it. And then at the age of 17, I moved up from Cornwall to London, started sending cartoons, going around Fleet Street, knocking on the doors, saying, hello, I'm a cartoonist. Do you want to see my stuff? And the security guard would just go, leave it here, mate. Yeah. But I started doing freelance cartooning for the newspapers. By the time I was 18, I was being published in The Sun, The Mirror, The News of the World, all of the tabloids, some of the chat magazines, the women's magazines as well. I was having cartoons published every day at the age of 18. And I thought, wow, hey, I've succeeded. This is my dream. This is my dream. I've done it. Now what? And it was a bit unsatisfying because although to the outside world I'd made it, you know, I mean, these were the big papers. But for me, my life was now just spent sitting at a drawing board, working until 4 or 5 every morning, just drawing cartoons. And when I was going out and about in the real world, my mind was always just trying to find the funny. Just every situation I was in, everyone I talked to, everything I saw, I was just like, yeah, what's funny? What's funny? What can I write down to put into my cartoons? I need these things. And I was 18. I didn't have any life experience. So it was hard. So I kind of decided, right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this sense of humor and I'm going to take this creativity. And instead of doing it just sitting at home on a drawing board, just drawing cartoons, I would get out there and do things in front of a real audience. So I started going to Covent Garden, where I used to hang around a lot in London to watch all the jugglers. And I thought, right, I'm going to give that a go. Went to circus school, taught myself how to juggle. Well, got taught how to juggle by some very good teachers, how to do other things like trapeze, tight wire, all these other things up in the air that I soon discovered I don't have a natural talent for swinging around in the air. I'm going to stay on the ground. Thank you very much. So became a juggler, did juggling shows in Covent Garden for a few years where I was admittedly one of the worst jugglers to ever be at Covent Garden. It was my early days, you know, but I was good enough to be talent spotted by Chessington Worldwide Adventures, who I then went on to work for a few years doing juggling shows for them, and then started getting more work and better agents and just sort of building up a glorious showbiz career, which with many twists and turns is pretty much what I've been doing since.
Got it. Wow. So it's much of it sounds as though much of the direction and development of your career stems from just getting bored. Right, I've done that. Oh, bored now. Right, yeah. What can I do next?
Yeah, I mean, it is really. I mean, I think the reason why I became a stand-up comedian, which I did for a few years, I became Eddie Twist, the Cornish stand-up comedian. I layered on a really, really thick Cornish accent, which, although I was born in Cornwall, by this time in my life, I'd completely lost that Cornish accent. And so when I tried to put it on, it sounded false as heck, but I rolled with it. So I was Eddie Twist, the Cornish comedian, and I did stand-up comedy clubs. The reason for that was I was there doing juggling, but I was thinking, right, what happens if I put the juggling balls down and I don't have props? How can I, you know, so yes, I wanted to explore that aspect of it. So I just thought, right, stand-up comedy, no props, you just walk on, you just hit them with your wit.
Yeah. Now I know to a lot of people stand-up comedy, it's great watching stand-up comedians, but to be a stand-up, to actually basically stand up and effectively say to people, I am a comedian, I am funny, I'm going to make you laugh, is a really terrifying thing. I mean, so when you what do you do when you walk out there and you hit them with your best joke and you get silence? Not that it will ever have happened to you, obviously, but if it did, I mean, but what? Yeah, what do you do when?
Yeah, I mean,
the audience isn't as receptive as they might be, or even worse, they start heckling or throwing things. How do you not take that personally, and how do you?
Yeah, there's good audiences and bad. And of course, I've been in various forms of showbiz ever since I was 21. So, you know, I've been through them all. And yeah, you still from time to time get an audience that is a bit flat, and you come out of there thinking, was it me? Was it them? What was it? What just didn't gel that time? But you know, unfortunately, those times are few and far between these days. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, certainly when I started entertaining, the reaction of the audience was, you know, it was pretty mixed. But I think, I mean, before I was a stand-up comedian, as I say, I started out in Covent Garden doing street shows.
Yeah.
If the audience don't like you there, they just walk away. You just don't have an audience anymore. You know, there's nothing keeping them there. So, you know, you're there, you're trying to entertain, you're trying to be funny, you're trying to show some amazing juggling tricks or whatever. And if they like you, they will stay. If you do something that's just a little bit funny, they will laugh and they will edge a little bit closer, and you've just got them. And it's very real. No one is stuck in a seat thinking, oh, if I get up, it's a big thing. You know, they were just walking down the street in Covent Garden. They saw this juggler. They thought, oh, I'll stop and watch him for a bit. And you know, there's no commitment there for them to stay. So if they've stayed until the end of the show and then they actually like it enough to put some money in the hat, then I know that I've done my job right. So that really is the best way of learning how to keep an audience, is that the fact that you have to. There's no other thing that, and if they do walk away, then, you know, they walked away.
Yeah.
Try another show, you know.
Yeah.
So I think I combated my fear of the crowd really by starting off in that very hellfire situation of street shows.
Right. So basically by throwing yourself into one where the reaction is, I guess it is the biggest and most severe reaction. As you say, if they don't like you, they just walk off. They won't even sit there and give you another chance.
It can get more severe because on the street, it's a bit lawless out there. So yeah, if they really don't like you, they can do a lot worse than just walk off. You know,
you're juggling with knives. So
yeah. I mean, I did have weaponry built into my act. I was juggling with knives. I had this great big fire thing sticking out of my head, so that I had flames coming out there and juggling the knives and stuff. Yeah, people don't generally want to hurl abuse at someone who's armed like that.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. excuse me. Goodness. So you start off as a cartoonist. You then kind of, I've got bored of that. Learned juggling because it looked cool when you wanted to get into that. You did the juggling. You then kind of realized, well, I'm not actually juggling. I need some other way of connecting with you. I know, comedy. So you then kind of got into stand-up comedy. And
I loved doing stand-up comedy, but the problem for me in the end with that was the way that the stand-up comedy industry is. There's this massive, massive, massive sort of amateur open mic stand-up comedy industry. Mm-hmm. And then there's this small sort of professional clubbing comedian industry. And then there's this very tiny sort of TV end industry. Yeah. And everyone always assumes that it's that TV end that you've got to be at or you're a failure. Actually, it was that working comedian is where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a lot of money in being a comedian at that sort of non-TV level. And I was thinking, all this work I'm putting into my comedy show for gigs that are only worth so much, as a magician, I can earn four times that.
Ah, right. So, and hence the next evolution of Ali.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'd started putting a lot of magic into my juggling shows as it was, and then sort of went through that trying the stand-up comedian just to sort of put down the props and just work on me and just try and make me a lively, humorous enough person to connect with an audience. And then I sort of picked up the magic props and thought, right, yeah, this is where the money is. And what's more, I can really have fun with this because as the stand-up comedian, I missed, you know, I love making people laugh, but there was other reactions that you can do as a magician that are just way beyond that. You know, you can really blow people's minds.
And gasping. How the? What? Kind of reactions, which I suppose you don't tend to get as a comedian.
Well, as a magician, you get people going, how did you do that? Whereas as a comedian, you get people going, why did you do that?
Yeah. So, I mean, all of these other bits and pieces, all these other steps in your career have all, I mean, as you say, you still have all those options for employment and so on. And they kind of all build together to create the Alan, which is out now, well, with the three, because you've got your three different magic personas catering to three different...
Gizmo, which is for kids' parties. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for years and years and years, I was doing corporate entertainment and people were saying to me, wow, you're really good. You should do kids' parties. And I was thinking, yeah, I'm doing corporate entertainment. You're telling me to do kids' parties. Yeah. And I was quite standoffish about it, you know, because kids' parties are seen as a sort of a low art compared to some of the venues that I was aiming for. And after a little while, I thought, why am I being so standoffish about this? Because they're right. I mean, yes, I would be a brilliant kids' entertainer. And I'm saying no, because I'm above that level. But okay, let's work with being above that level. So I thought, right, let's be a kids' entertainer, but be a bloody good one. And so when I moved house to South Wales, which was about 8 years ago now, I thought, right, now is the time to just sort of really, I've got a new geographical area. Let's just really establish myself as really the best kids entertainer in this whole area. So the first day when we moved into our new house in South Wales, I opened a file on the computer and I called it Best Kids Entertainer South Wales. And I thought, I've got no idea what I'm going to put in this file on my computer, but it's there. It exists now. Yeah. Things will go in it. And I started piecing together. I mean, I'd done a lot of kids shows before. I used to work on the Brittany Ferries, doing lots of shows back and forward, going between France and Spain and Ireland and so on. And I'd done a lot of kids shows for corporate events and for the Royal Parks and so on. So, but it was kind of specifically birthday parties that I thought I was now going to aim myself at. And so I started piecing together birthday party act and really made it what I wanted to do, rather than the rather dated way that a lot of kids entertainers are. Not all of them. I mean, I'm not gonna knock the whole industry. Yeah. But there's a certain bit of the industry that is quite tired and dated and doesn't really understand kids, because they see themselves as being a bit above being a kids entertainer. And I thought, no, I'm going to be a kids entertainer. I connect with the kids. They are human beings. You know, don't look over them. They are human beings. Yeah. And they are so easy to connect with if you just understand what makes kids tick. And I think I do that now very, very clearly. And the reactions that I get from kids when I'm doing the shows is pretty awesome. And so now it's really keeping me busy doing all of those kids shows. As we're coming out of the COVID years, the corporate gigs aren't really back yet. They're getting back. I'm doing a lot of holiday parks now, but the big corporate gigs ain't there. But doing kids parties, they are back with a vengeance. And I'm stupidly busy with those right now.
Brilliant. Brilliant. That's long may that continue. I was just thinking one bit that I really liked from what you were saying there was you were doing the corporate gigs and then someone was saying, oh, you should be a children's entertainer. And you were thinking, oh, that's below, there's kind of a step down. And then you had that moment, you know what? I'm going to do it, but I am going to be the best damn children's entertainer there is. I'm going to bring this level of me to that. So it's not a case of, oh, it's below me. It's right. It's below me. I'm going to bring it up to my level rather than sink down to the level I perceive it might be.
That's exactly the way that I tried to do it. And I there is a snobbery for against kids entertainers, which it's out there, and a lot of performers feel it. And I'd been sucked into that and felt that myself. I thought, kids' parties is the low end of the market. There's no real money in it. But do you know what? You're wrong. Because if you can, I'm typically doing four or five kids' parties at a weekend now.
Wow.
So on a Saturday.
A lot of ice cream and jelly.
Yeah. Don't touch them, mate. Don't touch them. So I would typically do two or three on a Saturday and then two on a Sunday. And that's a good living. Mm. I mean, the amount of admin that fills up the rest of my week from that it's pretty enormous. I mean, you wouldn't believe quite how many emails and bits of paperwork you got to fly around for that. But you know, that's a good living. And also what it gives me is, as well as going in and giving these kids the time of their lives, you're giving them really something to be happy and amazed with, and giving them a quality of magic and entertainment that they don't expect, that they're not used to in kids' parties, you know, pitching it so much more. Also is a great way for me to experiment and play with other ideas that I'm having for my bigger stage shows. For instance, as you mentioned, I was in the Family Entertainer of the Year competition earlier this year. The biggest stage, the biggest theatre in Europe, at Blackpool. And the things that I wanted to do on that stage, there were some new things that I wanted to try out. Well, where can you try and fail and it be okay? Kids' parties. You know, I can play with these ideas and develop them at kids' parties and get them ready for the stage where I'm performing them to a bigger audience. And that's great for me. That really keeps me creatively alive. There's this built natural flow for me to explore and develop new ideas.
Yeah, and I guess another great thing with kids is they are just so honest. If you do a trick or try a new routine for friends or something, they go, yeah, that was really good. God, that was awful. That was really. Whereas with kids, they'll either like, if they like it, they'll let you know they like it. If they don't think it's any good,
just like being back in Covent Garden. If they don't like it, they walk away or throw things.
So at least you're getting good, honest feedback, so you can really polish and hone whatever you're creating.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, there was one trick in particular that I wanted to do at Blackpool, and this Christmas just gone, I did a whole session of shows in local schools around here. I went on a massive tour. I did pretty much every school in my whole sort of local area over the Christmas period. I was doing like 5 shows a day, just zipping around the schools, doing like several shows for each school. And that enabled me to just really develop one particular trick where I produced this giant 7-foot Union Jack just from nowhere. giant flag. Of course, here in Wales, I didn't use the Union Jack.
Well, no.
I used a nice colourful striped flag thing. But then when it came to Blackpool, yeah, it was by then it was the Union Jack. And I'd been able to work that in doing like 5 shows a day at the local schools around here. And of course, when you're doing something for the kids and you're sort of trying to develop this new trick, you know, I work on it at home until it's ready for a young audience. You know, I don't want to go and do anything bad for a young audience. I don't want to mess up the trick or anything. So I rehearse it a lot. Then I take it out to parties. And that's when, once I've got the trick down, I take it to the parties. And that's where I start adding the comedy and the nuances and all the things to it. Because what the kids give you in their reactions is this wonderful microcosm of what the grown-ups are going to give in their reactions when you're doing it later. So the way that the kids react, if they get excited at one bit or confused at another bit, you just hope they're not going to get confused. But, you know, you see their reactions and then you can just sort of, right, okay. And then you work on just the comedy and the theatre of it all a lot more.
Nice. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So it's, and again, that goes, partly goes to that thing you were saying about children, so many see children's entertaining as kind of like lower level and beneath them, whereas you saw it and went, you know what, I'm going to bring it up to my level, and it's now a key part of your whole creative process. So
I love doing it, but I wouldn't have loved doing it if I was Mr. Tacky kids party clown.
Exactly.
And that's where that sort of feeling of it being at a certain level and me wanting to do something better, I'm doing something better. So I'm really proud of what I'm doing with the kids, with my kids shows.
So you're bringing it up to your level, so that excellence in everything that you do.
And then of course the level keeps growing, of course.
Yeah. And I know we could talk for a lot longer. I know we could, because we have before, but I know there's so much more we could talk about. Time is against. We haven't even had a chance to touch on your film, The Vampires of Bloody Island. Maybe we'll catch that at another point. But Alan, thank you so much.
Made a movie. Yeah. Okay. Next question.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here. People, there are going to be people who are going to want to check you out and find out more about you. Maybe even book you. Who knows? But definitely find out more and connect with you. What's the best way for them to do that?
Well, as I say, there's so many different things that I've done, and I do sort of keep adding a new thing every few years. So I've got a million websites all for the different aspects of what I do. But if you go to, I'm sure this is going to magically appear on the bottom of the screen or something.
Oh, yes.
alankempthorne.co.uk. Ping. It's not there, is it? You're just going to leave me.
I'm just going to leave you looking daft, yeah.
You're just going to do the lazy thing and put it at the text at the bottom, aren't you? You're not going to bother putting it on the screen. Right, okay, alankempthorne.co.uk. And from there you can go and you can see me doing Professor Strange. You can see the kids' parties. You can see stand-up comedy as Eddie Twist. You can then go see me on Wikipedia or see my cartooning career or look on IMDb and see what films and TVs shows you're going. Ah, I knew I'd seen it before. You know, that's you can get it all from there.
And that will happen. That will certainly happen when people check out your filmography as an actor. They will be films and TV programs they've spotted you in before now. So that's Alan Kempthorne. That's alankempthorne.co.uk.
Oh, you win the prize for correct spelling of the year, Keith.
Go to Alan's site or go to the show notes for this site. As always, it's at KeithBlakemoreNoble.com/show. Look for The One with Alan Kempthorne. You'll find his links. You'll find links to all the stuff that he does there. And check him out at alankempthorne.co.uk. Whatever you do, however you find him, do check him out. He's well worth checking out. You can see why just before we started recording this, we were trying to work out. We've been trying to get this put together for, we can't remember now how many years, so long ago when we first started. I'm glad that we finally managed to catch up and do this. Alan, thank you so much.
Lovely talking to you, Keith.
And thank you, dear listener, dear viewer, however you've caught it. I hope you enjoyed this. Do give us a like, a comment, a share. Share it with your friends. Subscribe. We'll catch you in the next one. And until then, I'm going to leave you with Alan's favourite quote. It's a lyric by John Lennon. And it's, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. To find out more, please visit KeithBlakemoreNoble.com. We'll be right back.